for those of you that don't know much about Wingspan, we are the National Bird of Prey Centre for New Zealand. And as a charity, we're pretty fortunate to say that we've been operating for 32 years. So it's been quite a journey, and Wingspan is still on a big journey. But, you know, from grassroots beginnings, we now have a very much an established centre here in Rotorua, where people can come and see birds of prey up close and learn about the conservation that we are doing. Birds of prey are really important because we call them our barometers of the ecosystem. So they're kind of, another way to say it is an ecosystem indicator. So it's not just about the birds of prey, it's actually about all the levels that support them being where they are. When you're working so closely with a predator, it doesn't actually matter if it's a falcon or a big cat or whatever it might be, you are very aware of what they need to survive. You're out there every day flying your bird, looking at the environment, and often it's falconers that notice, oh, you know, certain species is lower in numbers this season, or, oh, that's really strange, this wetland I always hawk around has lots of algal bloom or whatever it might be. So falconry and conservation are like this. It's really unique that with Wingspan we're able to give people that close encounter on the bird's terms, and you get that wildlife interaction that is what sparked me to get into conservation, and I think probably sparked a lot of people to get into conservation.
Hello.
Kia ora.
And welcome to the People Helping Nature podcast.
We're your hosts. My name's Anna.
And I'm Callum. And today we're really excited to introduce Ineke Milner from Wingspan Bird of Prey Centre. Welcome, Ineke.
Kia ora, guys. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here on a bit of a wet Monday, actually, but it's lovely to be here.
Warmest welcome on the show. To kick us off, would you like to introduce yourself, please, and the Wingspan National Bird of Prey Centre?
Absolutely. So as you guys say, I'm Ineke. I'm the general manager at Wingspan, and I've been fortunate enough to be involved with Wingspan since 2010, even though I did have a little hiatus and decided to do a bit of teaching in between all my raptor stuff. But for those of you that don't know much about Wingspan, we are the National Bird of Prey Centre for New Zealand. And as a charity, we're pretty fortunate to say that we've been operating for 32 years. So it's been quite a journey, and Wingspan is still on a big journey. But, you know, from grassroots beginnings, we now have a very much an established centre here in Rotorua, where people can come and see birds of prey up close and learn about the conservation that we are doing. So Wingspan has four main focuses. So we look at rehabilitation, I should say. We look at research. We have a big focus on education and advocacy as well in the bird of prey space, but a particular focus on our threatened species, the New Zealand falcon or karerea. That's a big part of what we do.
That's awesome. Now, Anna and I have been to your facility many times and brought quite a few people. It's definitely one of our fun weekend activities is to see you fly the raptors. But for someone who isn't involved or knowledgeable about the raptor space, what is a raptor or a bird of prey, and what species do we have in New Zealand?
Yeah, fantastic question. I think often when we use the word raptor, good old Jurassic Park kicks in and people somehow think you're working with dinosaurs. That seems to be a common thought when you use the term raptor. but basically, from a literary side of point of view, the term raptor actually comes from the Latin word rapere, which means to seize or to grab by force. And so birds of prey, raptors are sort of interchangeable, so it means the same thing. But the term raptor or a true raptor is a bird that will catch its own prey and usually has the right adaptations to do so. So usually has some sharp talons, big strong feet, and a curved beak for dispatching prey quickly and ripping and tearing it at the meat. So they're often mistaken, or other birds like your magpies, your kingfishers are often mistaken for raptors or birds of prey simply because they eat meat. They need those sort of distinguishing features, that hooked beak and those sharp bird catching or animal catching feet. The exceptions are your vultures. They are part of the raptor or bird of prey family. But vultures, as most of you probably are aware of, they don't do much of their own catching. They just eat the leftovers. And here in New Zealand, we're pretty fortunate. We have five birds of prey, five species of birds of prey, which is not a lot compared to some of our neighbouring countries like Aussie and some of the other big continents. But we have one endemic bird of prey, that is our New Zealand falcon or our kārerea, and that's found nowhere else in the entire world. We then have three natives, our Australasian harrier or kahu, which most of you are probably familiar with. They're our most common bird of prey. They're the ones you see soaring over farmlands and roadsides and often on the road eating a squash possum or a squashed rabbit. So that's often how people interact with them or see them. So they're native. So they are found here, but also in other places nearby like Australia. Then we have our more nocturnal species. So we've only got two diurnals, New Zealand falcon and our harrier. But then in terms of nocturnal species, we have ruru, or our moorpork, and they are also native, found throughout the country. And our newest native species is actually the barn owl. Now, they've yet to have a Māori name, so they're only known as the barn owl for now. That's how new they are. And in fact, I think it was in 2010, they were established as one of New Zealand's newest native species. So they are found at the moment. We have had sightings of them south of Auckland, but most of them are found up north where the climate is most preferable for them, really. And then our fifth bird of prey is the little owl or the German owl, and they are fully introduced. They are actually the only falcon. They're the only bird of prey that was deliberately introduced into New Zealand. And they were introduced to control small birds around the vineyards down south. So they're actually only found down in the South Island. So deliberately introduced to try and control birds and other things on vineyards and stuff down in the South Island. Yeah.
That's fascinating. Thank you for sharing that overview with us, which leads us to the next question. What is bird of prey or raptor conservation and why is it important?
In the simplest terms, raptor conservation is looking after our wild raptor population and making sure that those birds are understood and they are preserved, protected, depending obviously on their classification, but making sure that their numbers are all right in the wild. And really awesome question about why are they important. It's my favourite question because a lot of people don't understand, and a lot of the time raptors are actually really misunderstood. You know, they're hunters and they're predators, and so they do get a bad rap, and I think people forget actually how important they truly are. So birds of prey are really important because we call them our barometers of the ecosystem. So they're kind of, another way to say it is an ecosystem indicator. So it's not just about the birds of prey, it's actually about all the levels that support them being where they are. So as soon as you're in an environment and the birds of prey aren't doing well, it generally indicates that they don't have enough food or habitat, or they might themselves have lots of threats, which means that something is happening further down the food chain that shouldn't be happening. And so to support a healthy ecosystem, you have to make sure you support your birds of prey, because you make sure your soil is good, means you've got good invertebrates. You've got invertebrates, it means you've got other bird species that are eating the invertebrates, and then so on and so forth until you've got the raptors eating those other bird species. So they're very, very important at indicating whether or not there's a healthy ecosystem or environment.
That's really interesting. They're almost like the tip of the iceberg. You see this bird here healthy or not, but you don't see the whole food chain below it.
Absolutely. And I mean, iceberg is a great analogy, because I'm sure if we go back far enough and think about high school, maybe even primary school, learning about food chains and food pyramids, you normally have that classic pyramid shape, birds of prey up the top, and then you have things like grass, soil down the bottom, and it works its way up. Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's really fascinating. I think a lot of us think of raptors as kahu, as the New Zealand harrier, because that's what we see on the roadside. Seeing a kārerea in the wild is a lot more, or a moorpork for that, a ruru is a lot more elusive sight, but also a lot more rewarding. But Anika, how did you get into conservation? Like, what led you to doing this today?
Oh, great question. And it's a tough one, because I think for me, it's a series of events, and I guess a series of experiences. I was really lucky. I had a very outdoorsy upbringing. So I grew up on a dairy farm, which I guess is probably not particularly diverse in terms of the species that you find on a dairy farm. But nonetheless, it did spark an interest in being outside working with animals. And even though something as highly manicured and maintained as a dairy farm still can have quite a lot of species on there that are of interest. So I guess when I was younger, that really is what sparked it for me. I had parents that took us tramping and walking a lot. So we spent a lot of time outdoors in the New Zealand native bush and forest. And you learn to start to see a lot of things. And for me, I guess it was those wildlife encounters. And sometimes not necessarily the wildlife you want to see, but there's something about, you know, camping and hearing a possum in the middle of the night and going out with your spotlight and seeing it, and later on learning, well, actually, we don't really like those particular creatures being around for our native birds. So from a young age, it was just being outdoorsy. I was really fortunate in that I had parents supporting me to do what I wanted. So despite a lot of people saying, go and study engineering or mathematics or something like that, I had parents that encouraged me to follow something I was interested in. And for me, that was animal behaviour and zoology. So when I finished high school, I studied down at Massey in Palmerston North, and I did a zoology and ecology degree. And that really kicked it off for me. Fabulous course, amazing people that did it, like-minded people that did it, lecturers that had these phenomenal stories about penguins in Antarctica and all sorts of stuff. You know, godwits that did these incredible miles around the globe, you know, when they migrated. So I guess that's where I really got a good understanding of New Zealand natives. And yeah, I think I just knew right from then that I had to work in conservation. What that looked like at the time, I didn't really have a clear idea. I knew I just wanted to be doing something that meant something and working with our native species. And so I was lucky enough when I finished, or not long after I finished my degree, that Wingspan had a job that came up. I knew a little bit about birds of prey. I'd seen them when I'd been out hunting and things like that. But yeah, when I actually met the founder, Debbie, and the team at the time and what they were doing, I just knew I had to be a part of it. And yeah, I was lucky enough to be successful, I suppose. It's a boring story, I guess, in terms of introduction. I was just lucky enough to get the job.
Right.
And yeah, I was hooked, like quite literally, you know, all puns intended of course, with, you know, raptors. Yeah. Yeah, and I think once you start working so intimately with, I think, any species, to be honest, they literally get under your skin. And I think since then, you know, it's everything birds of prey. I managed to go overseas and I got to work with falcons in Wales for a couple of years. I got to do a little bit of travel to the Emirates and the desert to learn a little bit about their culture and the significance of birds of prey for them. Then I took a little bit of time off and I went and did teaching. Don't know why I call that time off, but anyway. I decided that I wanted to do more with education and getting kids out of the classroom. In the end, I actually had a hawk that used to come to school and sit in the classroom with me. So literally bringing nature right to the kids. And yeah, after 6 years or so doing that, I decided it was time for a change again. And I've come full circle back to Wingspan. So yeah, like I said, once you get very involved with a particular species or project, I think that passion remains there for a long time.
Yeah, I fully resonate with that. I feel like there's just something about having a relationship with an animal that, yeah, I'll use the same terminology, that hooks you in. And as far as I understand it, that relationship between birds of prey and humans, that's actually nothing new, right? Like the history of that relationship's been around for a very long time. Are you able to please run us through the origins of that and how that led to the techniques that we still use today?
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're right. So falconry across the globe has been around for a long, long time. There's a few debates as to exactly how long, but they reckon it was established about 4,000 years ago. So it's well and truly ingrained into all of our DNA in one way or another. I'm sure if we all look back in our genealogy far enough, we'll have a falconer somewhere in the family. But the term falconry actually means to use a bird of prey or a raptor to actively hunt for food. So that really is the definition of what a falconer is. So it's the oldest form of hunting. It would have been there before bow and arrows, certainly before any sort of guns. And so they think it sort of established in East Asia, the steppes of Mongolia, possibly. They think that initially it would have been people probably utilizing a kill that a bird of prey happened to make. So, you know, humans would have been very observant back in the day, watching nature, listening to nature, looking at different cycles and things like that. So it's highly likely that people spotted a golden eagle, catch something, they were on that kill while it was still fresh and claimed some for themselves. And then eventually, I guess, the idea to work with a bird to get them to hunt for you would have sort of started. And it's something that's been around for a long time. It was very, very popular sort of medieval times. A lot of people, if you talk about falconry, they think of knights on their horses with their falcon as they ride along. So that's a common way people know about falconry. And I guess in those times it was very much status. So the king, the more powerful a king was, the more falconers he had, the more falcons they had, and the larger the falcon they would have had as well. You sort of lower down the rankings in the royal courts, they would have had something like a peregrine falcon, which wasn't considered as majestic as something like a Jewel falcon. And then any ladies of the court would have had the tiny little falcons, so something like a wee little Merlin, so very dainty and tiny. Uh-huh. And that was what their class of falcon were. So it used to be very, very popular. It was, you know, a royal pastime, I suppose. So it sort of went from being a necessity, we need the birds of prey to get food for our family, to then becoming a bit of a status thing. It then somewhat lost popularity because, of course, guns were invented. And I can tell you now you have way more, well, it depends on how good an aim you've got, but you generally have way more success with a rifle than you do a bird of prey. And so in terms of necessity and getting food, it made sense for people to have a gun and hunt that way. And then, yeah, I guess in the last few hundred years, it definitely became more popular again for cultural reasons, but also that hunting side of things. But it's in 2010, it was actually recognised by UNESCO as an intangible cultural heritage. And
cool.
That was huge. That actually came about because we had about 800 or more falconers from 80 odd different countries who rallied together in a massive falconry festival to show how culturally important it was. And I mean, aside from something like the Olympics, I don't think it's very often that you have 80 plus countries representing a particular culture or sport or whatever that might be. And so, yeah, it's very much a part of all of our heritage and history. We are really lucky that falconers and falconry has stuck around. In fact, falconers are some of the, despite being seen as hunters, falconers are actually some of the most conservation aware, sustainably savvy people that are out there. Because when you're working so closely with a predator, it doesn't actually matter if it's a falcon or a big cat or whatever it might be, you are very aware of what they need to survive. You're out there every day flying your bird, looking at the environment, and often it's falconers that notice, oh, you know, certain species is lower in numbers this season, or, oh, that's really strange. This wetland I always hawk around has lots of algal bloom or whatever it might be. So falconry and conservation are like this. They really rely on each other.
Wow, I never knew that. That's fascinating. It's just amazing how ingrained it is within our society. I mean, I knew that we went back a few thousand years as far as our history, but I didn't realize how intertwined it was with status and with the development of our culture and with our identity as humans. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, I can get really passionate about it. I can talk about it for days. Yeah. But it's, I love the fact that in terms of us in raptor conservation, we're using this technique that is so ancient and we're using it for modern day conservation. It's the forefront of raptor conservation. And I guess I won't spend too much time talking about it because it's an international example, but the peregrine falcon in the States is a story that's often talked about, on the brink of extinction, wiped out across the States because of DDT, which was harming eggshells, making them thin. The birds weren't succeeding in nesting. And it was literally falconers who had them for breeding and for falconry that knew everything about the birds, knew how they operated, knew their behaviour. And it was actually falconers that bred them in captivity and then could reintroduce them to the wild and literally save the peregrine falcon from extinction. And that's what Wingspan is doing. We use all that knowledge, all those techniques to make sure we get as many karere back into the wild as we can.
Wow, that's fascinating, but it also ties really nicely into the next question, which is, if we focus on Aotearoa, New Zealand, how are our birds of prey, karere, and the others doing here?
Good question. So it's always an interesting one because we have, of all the visitors and people that come through to Wingspan, you tend to have two groupings. Some people say they see them quite a lot and other people will acknowledge they've never seen them before. Some of the people that say they see karere a lot sometimes get karere and kahu, our hawk, confused. So sometimes people think they're seeing lots of New Zealand falcons, but they're actually seeing our other common hawk species. But in some areas, New Zealand falcon are doing quite well. So locally, we're really lucky that we've got a healthy population of New Zealand falcon in the pine plantations. Often get a bad rap, our pine plantations, for not being necessarily environmentally friendly, but we work very closely with Kaiangaroa Timberlands and we do research out there and the falcons are doing great. There's good food source, good nests, good habitat. And so in our case, locally, you only have to be out mountain biking in the local forest and you're bound to come across a karere. However, nationwide, not so great. So nationwide, there would be less than 8,000 falcons left in the country. It's actually less than our common brown kiwi. And a lot of people don't even know we have them. So a lot of people don't even know we have New Zealand falcons that are that important. Yeah.
Far out. Yeah, unless they're on our $20 note in our pocket, right?
True. Yes, actually, yes. Everyone should know what a New Zealand falcon looks like, even though no one really has cash these days. So I suppose it's less likely to see it.
We need to make like credit cards with falcons printed on them. Yeah.
Yeah, I always kind of wanted the Wingspan logo on the money, but yeah, I don't think the
Reserve Bank is there.
Yeah,
they actually, fun fact, this is when I was still working at Wingspan, could have been like 2014 or something. The Reserve Bank, or they had artists who actually came out and took photos of our birds, reference images, and that's what they based that New Zealand falcon on. Yeah, it's pretty cool. We're literally on the money.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, sorry. So speaking of the karere, can you please share your top three favourite karere facts with us?
Oh, there's so many. There are so many. No, but I think a few of my favourites are, they're really special and unique because they're found only in New Zealand and nowhere else in the world. But on top of that, they're actually only one of four falcons in the entire world that are true forest falcons, or will hunt and live actively in the forest. Now there's 38 species worldwide, so to be one of four that is a forest falcon is pretty unique. So we're really lucky in that regard. And I guess a fact that links on to that is that not only are they this forest falcon, but they actually have a really unusual combination of adaptations. So your typical forest falcon will have short, broad or rounded wings and a long tail. So that allows them to be really maneuverable when they dash through trees and branches to try and chase prey. Long legs, so long bird catching toes, long legs. So obviously if they're reaching into a bush as their prey dives in, they can reach out and grab prey. But also really soft plumage. So if they're crashing and banging through shrubs and trees, they're not going to want to be damaging any tail feathers or wing feathers, because then hunting becomes an issue. So that's where they get their typical forest hawk-like almost sort of adaptations. But then at the same time, they're just as successful in open country. So our New Zealand falcons will do what you call ringing up. So they'll gain height and then do these big stoops down onto prey as well, which is probably your classic or typical falcon hunting technique. So there, it's very rare to see a falcon that does both, that can hunt in the forest really well and can hunt out in the open really well. And to be honest, I think that is a saving grace for our falcon, because obviously as the forests have diminished over time, they've adapted still really well to some of that open country. So they're still threatened, they're still not doing well, but they're certainly doing a lot better, I think, than they would have been had they not had that ability.
Right, that's fascinating. And as I understand it, the pine plantations, one of the benefits for falcons is that because they're quite open, they can fly through and they can see the mice and introduce things on the ground. And there might not be as much native food for a native ecosystem, but there's the introduced animals that they eat. Is that right?
That's it. Yeah. And in diet studies, although some of them are a little bit dated, so any young students or researchers out there that want to do some relevant modern research on these guys, hit us up. But the diet studies that were done on New Zealand falcon indicate that over 80 or 85% of their diet is introduced. So it's your, like you say, mice, rodents, even though rodents are quite active during night when falcons aren't, but certainly sparrows, finches, blackbirds, starlings, high on the ducks as well. You know, they're even capable of taking out things like rabbits and ducks. So that tends to be their main diet.
Yeah, I was trying to convince some of your team last time we were there to make the predator-free falconry in New Zealand, where you train falcons up to like hunt stoats. And then there's like these falconers that come into every forest and they're the heroes of the day.
I know, right? Wouldn't that be cool? But sadly, it's actually often the reverse. So yeah, sadly, it's our falcons that get nailed by stoats and things more often than the other way around. Yeah.
That statement leads perfectly into the next question, which would be, what are the biggest threats to our falcon? Why is it that we have less falcon, for example, than North Island brown kiwi these days?
Yeah, so another really cool question. So New Zealand falcon, pretty bold and pretty fearless, and that gets them into a bit of trouble as well, because during the breeding season, they're aggressive and they make themselves known. And they will dive bomb and attack anything that comes too close to their nest. So you'd assume that having that sort of fearless nature would mean that they do really well. But unfortunately, they have a lot of threats that a lot of our other native species have. So at nighttime, they're not hunting. So they're sitting on their nest or their chicks or their eggs. And so they are predated by, like I mentioned, stoats. Possums will sometimes come into the nest, maybe not take adult birds, but certainly take eggs or chicks. Cats are a massive one. Don't even get me started on cats, but they are a big threat. We have plenty of footage of cats coming in at night. And the worst thing with cats is they can be quite cunning. So they'll come in one night, take one chick. The next night they'll come and take the next chick. So they'll keep coming back to the same spot. So you have all those sorts of threats. Some of it is habitat. So depending on where they are, they might not have the ideal habitat to nest. But a really sad one is persecution and deliberate harm. So you wouldn't think we still see it, but people do shoot them because they're bold, because they're fearless, you know, that they have a little bit of charisma or brave, whatever you want to call it. They will often go for things like chickens, doves or pigeons that people keep, and sometimes things like ducks or pheasants that game reserves might be trying to build up for hunting, for shooting. And so although it is completely legal and you get a hefty $10,000 fine if you get caught shooting a falcon, that's what a lot of people resort to try and minimize falcons doing what they're naturally born to do.
Yeah, that is incredibly sad because they are such an essential species, like you already said, to the ecosystem. And it's it's just heartbreaking to me to hear that that is still an issue.
It is really sad, and a lot of it is just that misunderstanding. There are so many ways to mitigate or manage it and you know, reduce the loss of stock, be it pigeons or doves or chickens, you know. But one thing we keep trying to say to people, how often have you got a threatened species in your backyard? It's that that balance, that's nature. You know, we're in a country where, well, New Zealand falcons were here first, so maybe we just need to learn to live with them and find ways to have our chooks or our pigeons while still enjoying our natives.
Yeah, right. I think we're quite disconnected from the ecosystems, from the cycles of nature, from the roles of different species. And as humans, we have a big learning journey before we can really say that we're connected to our ecosystems again. And that means just because a bird or any species eats your stock or has a pretty face that's nice on your selfie, on your Instagram story, or if it's a supposedly ugly looking invertebrate that is crawling through the ground, that doesn't necessarily give us the right to call one more important or one right to be killed.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I really, really vibe with that. But what's Wingspan doing in the Karerea or the falcon birds of prey conservation space in New Zealand? Like, how are you helping to reverse these numbers and prevent the threats?
Yeah, so we're a small team. At the moment, there's five of us. staff on site, that is. But there's a number of different things. So as I mentioned before, we kind of have four main focuses. So one big thing is we look at rehabilitation. So any birds of prey that come in with injuries, we try and get them back on the wing and back out into the wild as quickly as we can. Now, sadly, often when they come in with those injuries, they're pretty bad. Birds are incredibly good at hiding distress or illness or injury until the very last minute. So by the time we get them, and by the time someone's been able to grab them off the side of the road or because of window strike or even being electrocuted on a power pole, whatever it might be, they're usually in a pretty severe state. The other difficulty, I suppose, we have with rehab of birds of prey is that they are hunters. They need good wings, they need good tails and good fitness to be able to do and survive. And so that's where our falconry techniques come in again. So there's the conservation side of it, being mindful of what the environment is doing. But we use those falconry techniques to train the birds, to get them fit and to actually double check, yes, you can fly before we let you go. You're actually going to have a fighting chance. There's no point having a bird of prey in an aviary for half a year, recovering from a broken wing and letting it go, and it can't hunt or fly properly. So that's where the falconry techniques are also really, really cool. So rehab is a big part of what we do. Of course, there's never enough time or money for it. We would love to have like a falconry vet centre and a vet on call that could help us, but we do a lot of it ourselves. There's the element of research. So we go out into the forest, in particular Karangaroa Forest, in the breeding season, and we monitor nests and we band some chicks so that we start collecting some data. It's quite passive, but it provides a backbone or a basis for any students that want to go out and research. But our a huge part of what we do, and I think across the board, it's really important, Callum, you're talking about that disconnect, you know, it's that education and that advocacy. So it's getting people not only to Wingspan as a place to visit, but getting people aware of the fact of, you know, what birds of prey are, why are they important, you know, why do we need to look after them? Because if people understand that, and whatever you do for raptors, it's going to feed lower down. So, you know, you look after raptors, everything else will fall into place as well. So that is a big focus of what we do. And we're really lucky with our falcons from an advocacy point of view. We have a species that, yes, is charismatic, you know, they have the attitude, but we're actually able to use those techniques, those falconry techniques, to bring them out for their training sessions and show people, hey, this is a falcon, this is what they fly like. They'll come right up close to people, they'll sit right on a post in front of the crowd. And I think there's that disconnect between nature and we're sort of often told to be very hands-off. And I don't mean that we have to go and start trying to catch everything wild out there just so we get a close encounter. But I think it's really unique that with Wingspan, we're able to give people that close encounter on the bird's terms. And you get that wildlife interaction that is what sparked me to get into conservation. And I think probably sparked a lot of people to get into conservation. You know, you're tramping, you sit down to have your sandwich and a little robin comes and sits on your tramping boot. I mean, that's all it takes. And then, you know, you're hooked again.
And it's also, to me personally, it's so much more meaningful to come to Wingspan and actually be part of the rehab program, seeing the training, seeing your advocacy birds. I feel like that gives you a totally different appreciation to just going, looking at a picture in a museum or even just a taxidermy. Yeah. That understanding really kicks in, and seeing you guys work with the birds. Quite often in nature, it's so hard to get that interaction. So having people be part of what you do anyway is just such a cool thing to do.
Yeah, and I just have to add a plus one to your events that you run. They're awesome. They're really phenomenal. Yeah, like just really good at engaging the crowd and keeping people involved.
Thank you.
I don't want to spoil the day too much, but there's like flying bird drones, and you get like the birds sometimes land on your shoulder, and like, oh, it's amazing. The last time we were there, we were told that the Karere or New Zealand falcon has the most personality out of any of the other falcons.
Oh, they do.
You can definitely see the personality on those days. And I think it bridges that gap between this is cool and curious, and this is what people are devoting their life to, and being able to kind of step in the middle and get a feel for what it is without going full depth into it is really cool.
Or even, and you don't have to disturb them in the wild either to, you know, like you say, to get that knowledge.
That's it. And the birds we have that we use for advocacy are birds that for whatever reason aren't able to go back into the wild. So, you know, they're birds that maybe had to be rescued as eggs or chicks and had to be hand-raised, so they don't actually know they're a falcon. They wouldn't breed in the wild and they get themselves into more trouble than they already do. So, you know, rather than just having them sit in an aviary or, like you say, be a photo in a book or on a poster, we can actually allow people to see them up close and personal.
Yeah, and it's fascinating. Totally recommend. So we talked a lot about the Karere. What about the other species, the other birds of prey that we have? What does Wingspan do for them?
So they're also part of that rehab side of Wingspan. So, yeah, if we get injured moorhawks or hawks, they become part of that process as well. They are part of the education and advocacy. So in the last month or two, we've actually had a hawk that sometimes is flown in the displays. So, yeah, we even bring Fran out sometimes. Depends on the weather. Hawks have very, very good lift. So as soon as it's a windy day, it's not so ideal to bring Fran out because she'll go up, up, up and probably over the other side of Lake Rotorua. So we have to monitor when she comes out. But, yeah, but, you know, sadly, I mean, with our harriers, I guess, you know, they're very common. They get struck on the roads a lot because they do eat the carrion, the squashed possums and rabbits and things on the roadside. So we're often only really dealing with harriers when they're injured. Moorhawks are an interesting one. There's not a whole lot of relevant new research being done with them. I think maybe students aren't wanting to go out and spend hours at night monitoring them anymore. being nocturnal makes it a little bit difficult, I guess. But, you know, talking to some people, certain areas they're doing really well. Again, other areas they're just not there and they should be. But what's really cool from a research point of view, and one of our trustees and staff members, Noel Hyde, has actually been doing a lot of diet study on barn owls. Now, raptors are hard to see and catch hunting, so one really cool thing that we can do with other raptor species and not just our New Zealand falcon is that we can collect prey remains, but we can also collect these things called pellets. And so birds of prey will eat bone, fur, feather, the whole lot, and anything they can't digest, they cough back up in the form of this little pellet, sometimes actually quite large considering the size of the bird. But what's cool about that is when you've got a nocturnal species like your moorhawk, like your barn owl, you can collect all that information and you can actually see what they're eating, how much of something they're eating. I mean, you can look in a pellet and if you find two mice skulls, you know that the bird had two mice in that particular meal. So, yeah, I think, yeah, the focus is definitely the New Zealand falcon, but we definitely try and encourage people to think about the other birds of prey as well.
How do you find pellets?
Literally by finding the roosting or nest site. So wherever they'll roost. Yeah, they'll generally just be underneath that particular spot. Yeah, and you just collect them. You can dry them. They keep for a long time. We actually sell them in our shops.
Yeah, so I was going to say,
if anyone's ever interested, they can buy them, take them home. You dissolve it in a little bit of water, and then you can pick out all the bones and bits and pieces.
Oh, wow. They've been crazy. Far out. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what is the wingspan mahi, your work that you do, mean for the wider region of Bay of Plenty and I guess for New Zealand as a whole? Like, what are you contributing towards?
Oh, yeah. So it goes back to that healthy ecosystem thing. So, you know, you look after your falcons, you look after your birds of prey, we look after everything else by default. So, you know, our mahi is all about understanding everything as a whole, you know, the importance of biodiversity. You know, you can't have one species up here without having a whole lot of different species that support it. So I would say that's really what we're about, that whole healthy ecosystem, biodiversity.
Mm. Awesome.
So zooming out a little bit to that nationwide, how aware do you find are New Zealanders of our native birds of prey species? And you already said you do a lot of education. How does that contribute to boosting that awareness a little bit more?
Yeah, good question. So I think we're lucky in that, we get a bit of a distorted view, I suppose. The visitors who come into Wingspan tend to have an interest in New Zealand wildlife or birds. And so those people that visit, we often have great conversations with them, and they know a lot about New Zealand native birds. I'm really glad I did the 6 years of secondary school teaching, because I realised just how terribly unconnected young people are with nature. I was horrified when I would do these bird quizzes at the start of my lessons, and I would put up pictures from, I don't know, half a dozen to eight different species. And I'm talking about, you know, I'm not even being mean yet and doing a tomtit versus a robin versus a, you know, I was picking something like a mallard duck and a swan and a magpie and, you know, trying to pick species that these kids would definitely be seeing in their backyards. I was horrified at how few of them could identify them, didn't know. And so, yeah, I actually think nationwide, I would say we've got a long way to go with connecting, you know, New Zealand is clean and green and environmentally friendly, but sometimes I'm actually concerned as to how little New Zealanders are aware of what's literally happening in their backyard.
Yeah, we've bought the PR, clean, green, and I don't want to disparage New Zealand, but that doesn't always reflect reality. And that's for what it's worth, that's what we're about. That's why we rebranded from the Reforestation Fund to Conservation Amplified. It's why we launched this podcast. Yeah. It's we can't expect widespread change to happen without that awareness, because awareness 100%. Precedes action. So that's awesome. And your open days, your advocacy programs, they really help with awareness. Are there any other activities that Wingspan does? I know you've got a really cool social media profile.
Yeah, we have Shannon does an amazing job of our social media. That is just growing tenfold, quite literally, since she's been doing that. And I think with young people, it's quite important. We have to be on social media with younger people. I mean, I think Facebook is probably where we started, and then very quickly Facebook became an older person's social media. So we had to get Instagram, and we haven't quite got to TikTok yet, but that might have to be the next move.
Right. Yeah,
cool. Yeah, so no, definitely social media is a big one. We do some off-site stuff. So when we can get off-site, we'll go and do things like Greening Day Taupō, where we'll set up a little stall and talk about what we do and encourage, in particular, children. They are our next generation. They're the ones that are going to be carrying on, trying to make a difference and making a difference. But we also have a journal that we produce annually. So we do about 1,000 copies that we print and distribute to members, but to schools and other visitors. And we send it to, you know, the National Library of New Zealand and things like that. So that's another big part of what we do. And then where we can, we do sometimes go to particular events. So we have had some sort of guest spots at conferences and things that align with what Wingspan does. Yeah.
Cool. Nice. And it's so important, hey, to like keeping that up. Because ultimately that's how we raise more awareness. And if we are aware and understand, we will care even more. I think that is part of human nature. Looking into the future, what does success look like for Wingspan, say in 10 and in 50 years time?
I've got lots of ideas of what it looks like. I guess on the forefront of where Wingspan is at the moment is we are in phase two of a three-phase or three-step development of Wingspan. So we've just built new display and breeding aviaries to encourage not only being able to captive manage the birds, but also allows people to see the birds when they come on site. The next phase is for us to build a visitor centre. So basically it'll be a multi-purpose building on the slopes of Nongataha, which overlooks Lake Rotorua. So it showcases our region, our local city. And basically the idea behind that centre is it'll house our research collection. So we'll have a museum up and running, fully functional. Of course, there'll be a gift shop. It has to be, you know, support the birds and Wingspan. But we'll have a conference room and classroom, and we'll be a big open space that can be used for all sorts of different conferences. So be it a conservation conference or, you know, a local doc hui or whatever it might be. The idea is it's going to be a space which ultimately is about the falcons, but again, supports everyone else underneath as well. So I guess in terms of, you know, success in 10 to 50 years, I want to see that visitor centre done. I want to see Wingspan absolutely pumping in terms of people coming through and experiencing our birds and learning all about it, us being able to showcase, you know, trapping techniques, you know, other things people can do daily to help birds of prey and other species in our country. But I guess that's quite a physical, that's something that I could very easily gauge or judge. But I guess from a holistic point of view, success for us would be that birds of prey become part of people's everyday lives. So that every day, everyone in New Zealand is seeing a bird of prey, hearing a bird of prey, if it's nocturnal like our moorpark, that they're getting out there and actually enjoying those interactions. That really is what we're about. Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. I think there's a few things we've touched on the last 5 to 10 minutes around people not being super aware of the ecosystem, not being active in nature, not being connected to it. And when you look at the actions that we are kind of encouraged to take, sometimes it can feel really above and beyond. Like I haven't walked in the bush in a year and you want me to give my time every weekend to run a trap line, etc. So yeah. I think it's really important when getting more of the wider public involved in conservation that we make it easy and accessible with practical actions. And yeah. So when thinking about raptor conservation in New Zealand, what are some practical actions people can take like easily without dedicating their lives like you do to the space?
I guess in the broader sense, it's looking at their own backyards and little things that they can do at home. And actually, some people might not even have a backyard. So it might be just being conscious about the space you have to use. I know I've got a garden, and as I'm getting sick of things that were pre-planted in the garden, I'm planting natives as much as I can. Right. And it seems like a really small thing to do, but the thing is, if I'm planting natives, I'm encouraging native invertebrates to come into my space, which then encourages, you know, the native birds to come in, be it for the invertebrates or the nectar or the flowers or whatever that might be, the seeds, the berries. So I guess from that point of view, people are pest trapping. You know, there's some amazing opportunities to get traps for your backyard for next to nothing. I know our local predator-free team, you know, have been distributing traps for local urban type environments. So that already makes a big difference. I mentioned cats, it's a bigger story, but, you know, thinking about the animals that you have, be it a cat or be it a dog, get your dog aversion trained. So if you are going out into spaces where natives might be, your dog's not going to chase them, not going to kill them. You know, cats, yes, it's a bigger issue, I guess, but just thinking about, you know, how many cats do you have? Can I keep them in at night? Can I create a cat patio for them? So my cat is safe, but my native birds are safe as well. So there's things like that, which for some people are out of reach. But I guess Christmas time, one thing I think about a lot in terms of practical tips is don't just buy stuff, you know, don't be tempted to buy rubbish off Temu or whatever else, you know, website, you know, buy, if you're going to buy stuff, you know, buy local, but more importantly, buy eco gifts, buy experiences, you know, I mean, yeah, I'm biased, buy a Wingspan gift voucher, but, you know, I mean, it's, you know, if you're a Rotorua late local, it's like, you know, organise to go out with the Kōkako Trust and go and see Kōkako in the forest, go to the Kiwi Hatchery, you know, come to Wingspan, even canopy tours, it's exhilarating and exciting, but the mahi they're doing is going straight back into conservation. So it's, yeah, I think it's thinking about stuff like that. Yeah, just being more conscious of how much we're buying, what we're buying, and what we're putting into our backyards, really.
Yeah, it's you just sparked a thought in my mind, which is like, when you think about how do you protect the falcons, or you're thinking about how do you support the lower levels of the ecosystem to create the space for it. And I think it's the same as us humans. Like, whenever we buy stuff, there's a whole supply chain, there's a whole ecosystem of businesses and economic activities that cause that to happen. And so it's like protecting the base level of the ecosystem in nature is the same as just not creating more strain on the ecosystem through lots of stuff we buy that
drives. I just think, you know, helping nature, you just have to start thinking small scale and thinking local. And if everyone starts doing that, it'll make a huge difference.
Yeah.
Speaking of nature and ecosystems, just before, what does a healthy ecosystem look like to you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I suppose I'm a bit speciesist in that I keep talking about birds of prey, but but ultimately it's diversity, you know, more than just a few species, more than just the same old species. You know, it's every niche being filled by our natives and not, you know, introduced. It's, you know, no pest species. It's, you know, having control, you know, again, things like regulations and restrictions around cats, you know, those sorts of things put into place. But definitely it's that biodiversity, you know, seeing a range of species. I'd love the day I look out my window and I can count 20 plus species in my backyard. I'll know that we're starting to make an impact, really.
Yeah, without a magnifying glass on the soil.
Exactly. Yes. Well, yeah. Then we're talking 20,000 plus.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. What about conservation? What does conservation mean to you, Aneka?
You know what? I think ultimately, if I think of conservation, I think people's health. And it might sound like a weird kind of, you know, most people would say, oh, animals, saving natives. But to me, I think if I think conservation, I think healthy people, mental health, you know, the physical health, what we're consuming, what we're breathing, conservation, protecting the environment, healthy people, happy people, really.
It's all part of that. That same cycle, right?
Yeah. Oh, it totally is. And we evolve to be part of nature. So to me, that statement makes so much sense. We are well, nature as well, and vice versa. So for our listeners, Ineke, how can people support Wingspan and the mahi you do, and how can people get involved?
Oh, yeah. Well, the first thing that pops into my head, of course, is donate. I have to put that plug in there, don't I? No, so, I mean, we're one of many charities, but we don't get any government funding or local body support. So we literally rely on people visiting or people donating to the trust. So that is what keeps us going. So I guess the easiest way for people to support us is literally to donate to the cause, be it buying memberships or gifts from our shop or just making wonderful contributions. And I am continually amazed and humbled by how generous people are, even in this current climate. You know, that people still find the money to help us out, is, it just blows my mind. And we're forever grateful for it. The birds are grateful for it. It's, we wouldn't be here without it. Visiting is a big one. The nice thing about people visiting is they get the experience, but then it leads on to word of mouth. I have a limited marketing budget. Okay, actually, let's be honest. I have no marketing budget. It's non-existent. So I say to every single person that visits Wingspan, if you tell 10 more people, then, you know, that's still a massive part of how we get more and more people coming through our doors. And then I guess, depending if people live local and have more time, but we love people coming to volunteer. Unfortunately, it's not always the sexy jobs, like working with the birds and handling the birds. And even when you're a falconer, that's only a tiny part of your day, because yeah, the rest yeah. is the cleaning and the food prep. But yeah, volunteers are a big part of helping us out. And in particular, it's even things like gardening, doing gardening, greeting visitors, you know, being someone who can come and guide other people who are coming to Wingspan. Yeah, I'd say they're the big ones. Or if anyone happens to win lotto and has an extra $3 million for my new centre, perfect. I'll be a happy lady.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, if you are not local to Rotorua, but you're visiting and you want some kind of natural encounter, it's definitely worth checking out Wingspan. Yeah, I can't speak more highly of the open days.
Yeah, I can only second that. It's always a wonderful experience. And also, I just want to point out how unique the work is that Wingspan does. It's, like you say, the biggest bird of prey centre in New Zealand. So it is the location, the spot, the organisation to go to if you want to know more.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you very much for joining us today, Annika. It's been a really insightful conversation, and it's been a pleasure to pick your brains. I've certainly learned a lot, and I hope our listeners feel the same.
No, thank you, guys. It's it's been a wonderful opportunity to come and talk about the mahi we do. And yeah, like I mentioned earlier, I could talk about it for days. So I think we've done well that it's only sort of within the hour.
Yeah. No, that's awesome.
No, yeah, and from me too, kia ora, thank you so much for coming on today and chat with us, having a kōrero about our birds of prey in New Zealand.
Thank you very much.
Cool. Cheers.